calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tell you the truth, the multinational corporations would really rather you weren't all that familiar with. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 6 minutes past the hour. It's the first hour of our Friday program. And as always, for going on 3 years now, I think, on the first hour of our Friday program is our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest serving independent. He's not a Republican. He is not a Democrat. The longest serving independent member of the House of Representatives in the history of that august body. Bernie Sanders, congressman from Vermont, on the line with us for our Brunch with Bernie segment. And Bernie, I know, loves to take your questions and talk about the issues of the day. We'll have a bit of a conversation here, and then we'll get right to the phone lines. Our telephone number, toll-free, all across the United States, 866-440-8466, 440-THOM, our telephone number. And you can also find that number on our homepage at tomhartman.com, where you can also drop into our live chat room and drop in and say hi if you'd like. Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom, from a beautiful, beautiful day here in Burlington, Vermont.
I was there last weekend. The weather was just marvelous. Bernie, my mother and niece flew out from Michigan to Portland, Oregon, here where we live, yesterday, and got stuck for 5 hours in the airport in Chicago, and general madness and hysteria. In fact, my niece bought a bottle of water inside the secure area next to the gate from the shop, and they wouldn't let her carry it on the plane. It was like panic. And I'm just wondering, you know, what your take is on here we are 5 years after 9/11, 10 years after the plot to blow up the plane and out of the Philippine Airlines, I guess 11 years, I guess. Where are we at on all this stuff?
Well, I think we got to look at it in two separate ways. Number one, is terrorism a serious issue? Is what just took place in the United Kingdom serious business? And I think the answer is, of course, yes. There are people out there, Islamic fundamentalists, who in fact are prepared to blow up planes to do worse. And it is the obligation, absolutely, of the United States government, the Congress, the President, to do everything that they can to protect the American people. That's number one. And number two, to try, which we are certainly not doing, to understand the causes of Islamic fundamentalism, the causes of terrorism, and try to reach out to people so that we don't see thousands and thousands of young people prepared to blow themselves up, killing innocent people, innocent Americans or Israelis or anybody else, in the name of some holy jihad. That's a long-term struggle, and we've got to wage it. So my point is on two levels. Immediately, we need to protect the American people, fight terrorism. Long-term, we have to turn that issue around. Do I think, in the midst of all that, that you have a Republican administration in Washington that will exploit the terrorist issue and the legitimate, real terrorist threat for political advantage? Of course, that's not debatable. That's Karl Rove's point of view. That's what he says. Republicans are falling apart in terms of the economy. Middle class is sinking. Healthcare system is disintegrating. Worst environmental record in American history. Tax on civil liberties. And on it goes. So what do they got? They will talk about national security. They will try to make those of us in the opposition, quote-unquote, weak on terrorism. My opponent in this campaign is now running a 30-second TV ad. Bernie Sanders is weak on terrorism, doing it in Ohio, doing it all over America. That's what they're doing. But having said that, the real issue is terrorism is serious business. How do we address it? And in that regard, I think it is fair to say that the war in Iraq that George Bush misled us into has made a difficult and bad situation worse. The fact that in many ways the Bush administration gave up the efforts that Clinton had worked very hard on trying to develop a peace process in the Middle East, became completely distracted from that, is resulting in where we are today. The fact that even in terms of just fundamental issues of national security, everybody knows that our borders are porous. You know, we see that as an immigration issue with illegal immigrants, but you know what? People who wish us well can pretty easily get through our borders. If you look at the issue right now of this attack that was thwarted in the United Kingdom, we're dealing with liquid explosives. Well, you know what, Tom, you'll recall that some 10 years ago that was an attack planned against us using liquid explosives. Well, how far have we gone in coming up with the technology that we need so that your niece can drink water on the plane when people might think it's a liquid explosive?
Well, here's even a step beyond that, Bernie. The way that liquid explosive is made, and I'm not revealing state secrets here, I mean, this is, you know, public knowledge, is by mixing acetone, which is basically nail polish remover, with pure hydrogen peroxide. Now, the hydrogen peroxide you buy in the drugstore is only 3%. Most of it's water. It's 97% water. And so the only way you can get pure hydrogen peroxide is from a chemical supply house, and usually it's used in industry because it's dangerous stuff, you know, at that high level of purity. That technology of mixing those two chemicals together to make a bomb that can be ignited with a flash from a camera or something like that was, as you said correctly, was used 11 years ago to blow up, to blow a hole in the side of a Philippine Airlines, you know, passenger jet by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Ramzi Youssef, the guys that we got, right? So and you would think that the Bush administration would put two and two together sometime in the last 5 years and say, you know, maybe we should have a registry of people who are buying industrial strength 100% pure hydrogen peroxide because it's only used for industry. But no, they're not doing that.
Right, and that's the point. I mean, those are the things that we should be doing. And going back to, you know, you and I have discussed this in the past, the vulnerability of this country in terms of very poor port security and the fact that we are not checking the vast majority of containers that come into this country that can contain and have some very dangerous material in them.
And we're not checking the cargo on our passenger planes. The plane that my mother flew on yesterday, she got, you know, granny got frisked, but the cargoes didn't.
So the point there is terrorism is serious business. Is the Bush administration doing a particularly good job in protecting us? In my view, no. The answer is no. Is the war in Iraq and our foreign policy making a difficult situation worse? Yes, I think it is. Will the Bush administration and Republicans exploit the real and legitimate fears of terrorism for political purpose? Of course they will. So what our job is to make sure that we reassure the American people, those of us, in fact, who are fighting hard to protect the American people from terrorism, short-term and long-term, and expose the weaknesses of the Bush administration in that area.
And those weaknesses go beyond just the absolute incompetence and lack of concern, apparently, for things like, you know, tracking hydrogen peroxide or inspecting the cargo of stuff in planes. All the way to, for example, the United States virtually ignoring southern Lebanon when that democracy, when Syria pulled out and Israel pulled out and there was a power vacuum there, and the resolution 1665 from the UN said, you know, okay, world, step in, help out, and Bush said, we're too busy, we don't do that stuff.
And the fact that we have now given up the pursuit of Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy, you know, who killed 3,000 innocent Americans, and he's safe in some cave in Afghanistan, and on it goes. So, I mean, I think as a nation, what we have got to do is look at this very serious issue short-term, protecting the American people, dealing with the immediate crises that we face, long-term, which is very difficult. I mean, admittedly, it's difficult. And that is, how do you reach out to the people in the Muslim world, people who are living on a dollar a day, people who have no education? How do you say to them, you know what, the United States wants your kids to have an education, wants your kids to have health care. We are not your enemy. Osama bin Laden and people who want to see you blow yourself up, those are your enemies. Now, how do you do that? That's not so easy. But we have clearly are moving in exactly the wrong direction in that whole effort.
You know, Bill Clinton, out of his presidential campaign, there was that slogan that became virtually a cliche, the best welfare program in the world is a job.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you could also say, in a very real way, one of the best anti-terrorism programs is a job in a democracy. And help, you know, and when Bush went in and knocked down the Iraqi government, the first thing they did was create a neocon state, you know, tore down the borders, said any corporation can come in, they can bring in foreigners, cheap labor, they made labor unions illegal, flat tax, 15% flat tax, you know, do away with the minimum wage, all these things. And now you've got 50% unemployment in Iraq, and they wonder why the
right,
Iraqis...
So if you are a proud Iraqi, if you are unemployed, if you can't have electricity to run an air conditioner when the temperature is 120 degrees, you see American troops going up and down the streets, how are you feeling about the United States of America? and I'm feeling too good. And that's in other countries as well. Now, this is tough stuff, and I don't want to simplify it, and I want to blame George Bush for everything. This is tough stuff. But clearly, we are losing this effort. More and more people are turning to the Osama bin Ladens of the world. They're not looking at us with respect. Quite the country.
And we need to change that.
Turn that around.
Yeah, absolutely. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. We'll be taking your calls right after the break. 1-866-440-8466. Toll free across the United States. 866-440-THOM. Our number. 16 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program. Viagra for your brain. But don't tell Limbaugh.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, but ain't that America, you and me? Ain't that America, something to see, baby? Ain't that America, home of the free, yeah? Little pink houses for you and me.
And welcome back to the radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America, the Tom Hartman radio program. 21 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Once a week, our checking in with Congressman Bernie Sanders, an opportunity for Americans. I think of Bernie as America's congressman. He's the only independent in the House of Representatives and the longest serving independent there. If you want to speak with Bernie, 866-440-8466. And Bernie, Patricia in Sacramento, California, listening on KSAC on the line.
Hey, Tom. Hi there, Congressman Sanders. I wanted to bring forth now, I mentioned this about a week or 2 weeks ago, Tom, about the invasion, possible invasion of Iran, but I have a more detailed article in the Rolling Stone magazine that I wanted to ask Congressman Sanders on. This basically says that a group of Pentagon officials were plotting to invade Iran even before the bombs fell on Baghdad. And he mentions people like Douglas Feith, Steve Rosen, and Keith Weissman, who was AIPAC's Iran expert. And I wanted to get your opinion on, do you think that that is possible, that this was concocted, you know, prior to even invading Iraq, and that how serious is this?
Patricia, anything is possible. Clearly there are some extremely right-wing people hanging around the Bush administration who believe in militaristic efforts all over the place. So I'm not going to tell you anything is impossible. I think, on the other hand, there are many military people today, high-ranking military people at the Pentagon who would tell you that an attack on Iran would be a big, big, big mistake. Frankly, I don't believe that it's going to happen. So that's my thought on that.
Tom, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Hey, Bernie, I think how to pull the carpet out from under these guys, the cons, is to attack their perceived strength on national security directly. Go right at them, just like Rove tries to do with the swift boating and all that. You just basically have to recite the record in history. Clinton proved that the Democrats know how to do it. They caught the first World Trade Center bomber, Ramzi Youssef. He sits in prison. They caught Timothy McVeigh, Terry Nichols. Both got, you know, in prison and executed, crushed Milosevic without one NATO casualty. You have to go right at them and recite the history of Democrats know how to do this. In fact, this is proof that law enforcement is the way to go, not bombing everybody. And again, and then repeat the conservative failures. 9/11 happened on his watch, and, you know, on and on. You have to go right at them and show the Democratic successes.
Okay. Good. Thanks for your thought on that.
Thank you, Tom. You're our Democratic consultant
for the
day.
Well, I think the point is, what Tom's point is these guys have done a bad job. It's a difficult situation. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, you know, a Democrat in the White House would make everything better tomorrow. It's not going to happen. This is tough, tough stuff. But I think if you look at the record of Osama bin Laden still being alive and well, if you look at the record of al-Qaeda growing cells all over the world, if you look at the fact that more and more Muslims are turning to Islamic fundamentalism, which clearly is not helpful in the fight against terrorism, if you look at the fact that country after country, from Canada and Mexico to all over the world, are looking at the United States with less and less respect, more and more disdain. That is not helpful in the fight against terrorism. So Tom makes, I think, an important point.
Yeah, and indeed. Tim in Grand Rapids, Michigan, WTKG. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Bernie, thanks for taking my call. After all this happened yesterday, I started listening to the right-wing talk show, and I'll be specific, Limbaugh, Hannity, Glenn Beck, among others. These guys are all but advocating World War III now. And, you know, I think it's time politicians took these people on because they are so dangerous and there's so many people in their audience. It's just getting out of hand.
Well, we are taking them on, and that's what this election is about. And what they are doing, what Limbaugh and the other people are doing, is, of course, using this incident for very partisan political purposes. What Tom and I were just talking about is if you look at the record of the Bush administration on terrorism, it is not a strong record, not a strong record in terms of defending our country against the terrorist attack, many vulnerabilities that we still have, and certainly not a strong record in terms of capturing Osama bin Laden, et cetera, et cetera. What the next 90 days is about is to determine whether Bush will continue to be able to control the U.S. House of Representatives, the U.S. Senate with right-wing Republican leadership, or whether we make a change which will have a national impact, not just on national security, on the economy, health care, environmental protection, education, and so many other areas.
Yeah, this is really more, this election, we have to take a break in about 20 seconds here, Bernie. This election is about a whole lot more than just the war in Iraq.
Oh, it is, certainly. It is this country in virtually every direction, every area that you can think of is moving in the wrong direction. Our country is being run by right-wing extremists who are working day and night for the wealthiest people in this country, for the large corporations, and have turned their backs on the middle class and working families.
Yeah, and I'd say the large multinational corporations. They're not helping out the American small business person either.
Yes, you're absolutely correct on that.
Yeah. It's 27 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our number 866-440-8466. We'll be back with your calls. TomHartmann.com. Also, if you want to drop into our live chat room right after this. 27 minutes past the hour, right here on the True People's Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartmann.
The end of the line is in your mind, and you'll be staying in your mind, bone for bone and skin for skin, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, heart for heart and soul for soul, somebody said what is truth. Lock it up and close it down. The sound of mourning like a dove. High beyond the rattle and roar. Look into the face of love.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us on the line. Our number 1-866-440-8466. And Barbara in Charlottesville, Virginia, home of the University of Virginia. I wrote a book, What Would Jefferson Do?, all about your about your place and with our newest affiliate, WXAX. Hey, Barbara.
Oh, thank you so much for giving me this time. It is so confirming to listen to someone like Bernie Sanders. You know, there are times when people like me feel kind of alone. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. And I just, you know, this terrorist attack, I believe, is real in its planning. But the planning stages have been known for months by both Britain and this country. And evidently the event of Ohio was scheduled to be around September 11th. So I wonder about the timing of the release coming one day after the Connecticut election, in which anti-Iraq war feeling was highlighted. I wonder just it was just the day after. It could have been released before. The American public, duped as it is, could have been let in on this planned
harm. So, Barbara, your question for Bernie, does he think there's a political agenda here?
Well, okay. Barbara, I can't answer that. I just don't know. I mean, what I do know, as I mentioned earlier, is certainly what Karl Rove has told us months ago, is that at a time when the Republican agenda on the economy, education, the environment, the war in Iraq, virtually every other area, is being rejected by the American people, at a time when the Republicans are in real danger of losing control of the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, what Rove has said is that national security is the issue that they want to focus on. Will they exploit that issue? Absolutely. I can't say anything more in terms of the timing of what's been happening.
Storm in Carbondale, Illinois. Hey, Storm.
Hi, fellas. Wanted to ask both of you if you have an idea. In view of the way Bush and Republicans react to terrorist threats, do you suppose they're going to start bombing and invade Great Britain and Pakistan?
Well, let me be... I don't think that they're going to be bombing Great Britain. I doubt that very much. But, you know, I think you have a an administration that believes that military force is the most potent thing that an effective thing that we can do in terms of foreign policy, and we've seen them use it and use it and use it again. Unfortunately, the world is a little bit more complicated, I think, than they think that it is, and obviously military force at times is absolutely what you've got to do. But I think if we look at the world that we see today with what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in Iraq, what's going on in Afghanistan, I think the bottom line is the Bush administration has not done a particularly good job in making this a more peaceful world, a world in which terrorism is on the decline, I think quite the contrary, or even a world where we are doing a particularly good job in protecting the American people from a terrorist attack.
Ray in Bellingham, Washington, you're live with Bernie Sanders. Ray?
Oh, yes. Oh, hey. Excuse me.
Hey, Ray.
Bernie, I would like to ask you if there's anyone has ever in Congress culminated the cost of this industrial military complex. How much money are we spending on arming the world and building all of this stuff to buy votes? In other words, we're spending billions of dollars aside from the war with arming ourselves, and I just thought that could be put in context.
Well, Ray, that's a good point. I think there is pretty widespread knowledge that a number of military projects that are put into play are done so not because they meet the needs of the U.S. military, but because they meet the political needs of a member of Congress who would like to create jobs in his or her district. I don't think that is terribly much in dispute.
Ed in Bedford, New Jersey. I'm assuming listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, Ed.
Oh, yes. Hello?
Hi.
Yeah. How you doing, Bernie and Tom? I wanted to bring up the fact that Bush claims to support democracy around the world. In fact, he's shoved it down a few people's throats at the end of the gun. But right here on our southern border in Mexico, I find it amazing that here we have a situation where one candidate who ran democratically had virtually had his election stolen, and we say nothing because of the fact that he's a leftist. Why, you know, just a couple years ago we went over to Lithuania and raised a fuss in the world, made sure our media talked about it, where, you know, the candidate there had his election stolen, and we virtually forced Lithuania to have a new election. And we're, you know, that's one example I wanted to bring up, and I think it's alarming that no one's talking about what can happen. There could be a revolution right on our southern border, and no one's talking about it. In the Middle East, Hezbollah, Hamas have run for office, and they're democratically elected, and now we're allowing Israel to bomb them into extinction practically. The president of Iran was democratically elected, but I noticed most congressmen, most Republicans especially, calls him a dictator.
Well, in terms of Mexico, the difficulty there is people anticipated a very close election. The demand on the part of the fellow who lost is that they should recount every vote, which, without being an expert on that issue, seems to me to be a reasonable thing to do. And the concern is that in Mexico, historically, elections have been absolutely dishonest. And there is no question that a member of that party, I think it was, Tom, what, 1988, clearly was winning the election. Suddenly the computers went down.
Overnight, yeah.
Was that 88?
I don't recall the year. I think it was more recent than that, even. But it was in the last decade or two.
And no one denies that election was absolutely stolen from this political party. So people there are saying, hey, what's going on now? The situation, admittedly, is much, much better than it was then. So the guy is making a demand that every vote be counted, which, I don't know, to me seems like a reasonable demand.
Yeah, if only Kerry had, but let's not go there. Mark in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Mark.
Hi, I wanted to follow up on a previous caller's question where he mentioned the right-wing Rush and Glenn Beck and so forth and saying that we should go after them for these lies. And I think the answer went in a different direction. But I really want to get back to that. I mean, do you see any remedy that we can have for this? Can we go after them on some sort of FCC violations? Or I'd like to know why John Murtha is not suing these people for slander or libel or something.
Well, problem is that some of us believe in freedom of speech. And what the real solution to that is more free speech, not less. I think it is not a great secret that people like Rush Limbaugh are not telling the truth very often, and they attack people unmercifully. I've been at the end of that myself. But I think the real issue right now is not just to worry about Rush Limbaugh, but it's to get people like Tom Hartman and Air America and other progressive voices on stations all over the United States. So for the first time in many communities, people will be able to hear an alternative point of view. No, to answer your question, I don't think it's a good idea for the government to be sitting up there checking on what people are saying, whether it's Rush Limbaugh, Tom Hartman, or anybody else. But I do think we have a major crisis in this country when you have a smaller and smaller number of media conglomerates controlling what we see, hear, and read. And one of the great issues of our time is the fight for more media diversity, more points of view out there, and decentralizing the media concentration which we now have.
Patty in Bellevue, Washington. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
Hi.
Hey, Bernie, you are co-sponsor of H.R. 3760, which is the Department of Peace and Nonviolence bill.
Yep.
And while there's growing awareness of this bill, we're still not hearing it talked about too much in the media, and it has 75 co-sponsors in the House, two in the Senate. Could you talk a bit about why you support this bill and how it would help strengthen our national security?
Well, clearly, as a nation, if we want to get to the root causes of war, we have to have international communication. We have to be focusing on peace. We have to be reaching out to other people. We have to be talking to people. We need a concerted effort to try to bring people together so that situations do not fall apart and we go to war. And one of the things that we want to do through that bill and through other pieces of legislation is have, among many other things, young people communicating with other young people, physicians communicating with physicians. Talk is a lot better in trying to resolve international conflicts in terms of trying to deal with misunderstandings than is going to war engendering hatred. I was the mayor of the city of Burlington, Vermont, for 8 years, and we started several sister city programs, which were just tremendous in bringing people together. And I think we've got to do a hell of a lot more than that in our country and around the world.
Thank you, Bernie. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls after this. Our number, 866-440-8466, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the True People's Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I don't know how long I can hold on.
And welcome back. Yeah, George, we'd like to know, why do we have to go into this war? Welcome back. Tom Hartman Radio Program, your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Art in Vancouver, British Columbia. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Thank you so much, Tom. Something you said last week disturbed me for the past week when you were talking to Congressman Sanders last week. You said something about good Republicans. And since I used to be a Republican and I'm not now, I'm wondering if the congressman or you can name any good Republicans in the Senate or in the House who are not in lockstep with George Bush and his gang.
Bernie?
Well, yeah, there are people who are not in lockstep. There are people...
Ron Paul comes to my mind.
Who?
Ron Paul comes to my mind.
Well, Ron Paul, right, is out of step all of the time. You have people who will vote against them, Sherrod Bullitt from New York State will vote against them on environmental issues. You have people, the congressman from Delaware who led the effort on stem cell research, on trade issues. You'll find not only Ron Paul, but other Republicans standing up and fighting against this disastrous trade policy. But what you haven't found, so there are individual Republicans, and more so now as Bush's popularity is descending, who have the courage to break away from him on issues like civil liberties, on issues like trade, and other issues. But with the exception of Jim Jeffords from the state of Vermont, who was a Republican senator who finally said that the Republican Party was not a party that he could any longer be comfortable with, no other Republican has had the courage to do that. And that is... I frankly would not have expected that that would have been the case, but they didn't have the courage to break and say, sorry, the Republican Party has become an extreme right-wing party. I can't stay there anymore.
And the reason that that's so important is because as long as they stay in the party, they're supporting the leadership.
Absolutely. Their
Simply
first
by
vote
their...
is for the right-wing leadership. Absolutely. And that is the most important point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. David in Amherst, Massachusetts. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Bernie, I am curious about campaign reform, and I really think this is the answer potentially to a lot of the problems that we have. Is there any legislation that's out there pushing the public funding of campaigns? I know even in the situation with Ned Lamont in Connecticut, I'm happy that he came through the Democratic primary, but he is a multimillionaire, and if he wasn't, I don't think it would have happened. And I think that's a continuing problem, and I'm wondering what you have to say about it.
Well, David, you're absolutely right. The issue of money in politics is a huge issue. I don't think we're going to elect the kinds of people we need to elect to represent the middle class and working families or people concerned about the environment unless there is serious campaign finance reform in this country. What you're seeing now is not only more and more very wealthy people running for office who are self-funding, but you're also seeing the incredible amounts of money that are coming in from the corporate executives and big money interests to fund the people who will represent their needs. Clearly, so long as Bush is president and the Republicans control the House and the Senate, there is not going to be serious campaign finance reform. What we are seeing at various state levels in Maine, Arizona, to some degree in Vermont, you're seeing efforts to move toward public financing of elections, which I strongly believe in. Ultimately, what we need to do is have public financing of elections, limit the amount of money that can be spent so that you don't have these very wealthy guys or special wealthy interests buying elections. Buying elections is what is increasingly happening in this country, and it is not what democracy is supposed to be about.
Bill in Seattle, Washington, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Bernie, thanks for everything you're doing.
Thank you, Bill.
I hope you're in the Senate real soon.
Thank you.
And, two things. Number one, do you have a figure on how much we subsidize the oil industry every year through our tax dollars? And number two, is there anything more that can be done to promote alternative energy technologies right now? Like just recently announced building in the bluest of blue America, the San Francisco Bay, wouldn't you know it, they're building a $200 million pilot project to produce what they call a CIGS, a photovoltaic cell. Chromium, indium, gallium, selenide sprayed on some flexible surface that produces a photovoltaic cell one-tenth the cost of the current silicon
Fantastic.
Cells.
All right. The answer to your question is we are providing billions of dollars in corporate welfare for the fossil fuel industries. They are drilling on public lands and not paying anywhere near what they should be paying in royalties. But as you indicate, there is now exploding technology out there in all areas to move us away from Middle East oil, from polluting fossil fuels to clean, sustainable energy. Should the federal government be investing heavily in those technologies? Absolutely and positively. We can make huge breakthroughs in the next couple of years, and in the process, not only clean up the environment, but create millions of good-paying jobs. And that is something that absolutely we should be moving forward in a very vigorous way.
Yeah, when you're driving alone or you're driving your SUV, you're driving with Osama. That's right,
and the idea just on that issue, not only sustainable energy but energy efficiency, the idea that we are driving vehicles today to get worse mileage per gallon was the case 25 years ago, is almost incomprehensible.
Yeah. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Always great having you on the program.
Okay. Talk to you next week.
Indeed. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Coming up next, John Zogby is going to be with us. Some new polls about how Democrats are feeling about the election in Connecticut. What do Democrats across the country think about this? A fascinating take on it. And John Zogby will be here with us. And then in the third hour of our program, Chris Simcox, the president of the Minutemen. You know, those right-wing vigilante guys down there on the border? He's going to be with us. It should be an interesting conversation. 57 minutes past the hour, right here on the Tom Hartman Program, where reason is our lifestyle choice.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Real Free Speech Zone, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio, streaming live around the planet on WhiteRoseSociety.org, RadioPower.org, AirAmericaRadio.com. And on cable systems in 29 states with CRN Digital. Welcome back to our program. John Zogby is with us. He is an independent pollster for major news organizations, NBC, Reuters, major media. I'm sure you've heard his name. President, CEO of Zogby International, the website Zogby, Zogby.com. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Good to be with you.
Great to have you here. And I'd like to just set this up, John, by you and I have talked before we went on the air, and you indicated that you'd be willing to have conversations with any of our listeners who may have questions about your polls and things like that. So if let me just toss out our phone number here, 866-440-8466. And if you have questions for John Zogby about the polling and things like that, we'll hopefully have an opportunity to get to those as we go through the next few minutes here.
Hey, Tom. I spend my entire life bothering people at home, especially the dinner hour, asking them questions. The least I could do is allow them to ask me some.
That's a good one. You know, it hadn't occurred to me the irony of that. you just completed a poll that about... Well, rather than my telling you, there's about the Lamont and Lieberman thing in Connecticut. How is the question phrased, and what was the result? What did you learn from this?
Well, there were actually a series of questions, but I mean, basically, the key question, was about what the Lamont victory means. Do you agree or disagree that Lamont's victory over Lieberman means the National Democratic Party is controlled more by the liberal wing of the party and not by moderates? 17% agree with that, 68% disagree.
So 68% of Democrats consider Lamont a moderate.
A moderate or mainstream Democrat. I mean, basically, this and the results of other questions as well are clear. This election was about Iraq. and where Democrats stand on Iraq, and really it was about very little else.
I'm stunned by this, John Zogby, that 68% of Democrats would answer the question that I'm not stunned by the result of your poll, but by the response of the media. What amazes me is that you can't turn on the talking head shows, the commentary shows on TV that purport to be relatively unbiased, you know, Chris Matthews and folks like that. You can't turn these shows on without hearing them describe Ned Lamont as the leftist candidate or the liberal candidate or the fringe candidate or the anti-war candidate. You know, they always put some adjective ahead of his name that is other than, you know, simply the Democrat running against Joe Lieberman. And yet your poll indicates that the Democrats that you've polled don't think of him in those terms. Why the disconnect?
Well, for starts, Tom, you and I get this because neither of us lives in Washington, D.C., and neither of us spends our entire life talking only to people in Washington, D.C., that creates a conventional wisdom, which oftentimes is not true. But clearly, the disconnect here is that this is where Democrats were at even 2 years ago. And my polling was very clear as early as April, May of 2004, when that election was all about Iraq. And yet the Democratic candidates and then ultimately the Democratic candidate, John Kerry, couldn't get their arms around it to come up with a clarity and a position that their very base wanted to hear, which was an exit strategy.
You mean your polling was showing that the majority of Democrats wanted Kerry to be calling for an exit strategy in the 2004 election, and he
absolutely
failed to do that?
He
did Kerry know that?
I think Kerry did, but I think Kerry was concerned that he would appear to be flip-flopping, and they would open up the charge that he was flip-flopping, and then ultimately what he did was he flip-flopped anyway. Mm. I voted for the $80 billion before I voted against
right.
him, and
yeah.
God knows where that left us. But let me just share with you a number, and I'm not going to burden people with statistics, but this is staggering. This is our most recent poll nationally in July. We asked the usual question that we ask: has the war in Iraq been worth the loss of American lives? Overall, 36% of voters agreed, yes, it has been worth it. 57% said no. But when I look more closely, here's the truth in the numbers. Among Democrats, 16% said the war has been worth it. 82% said the war has not been worth it. Among independents, 23% said the war has been worth it. And 73% said the war has not been worth it. And so clearly what you have here is not only the Democratic base wanting clarity and exit from Iraq, but also a substantial number of independents. This is the new political center when it comes to the war in Iraq. The political center, it's not a cut-and-run strategy, as some would like to argue. This is what Democrats and this year Democrat-leaning independents are saying they want.
Yeah. Over at YouTube, you know, the place where you kind of publish your own audio, there's a clip that one of the users there put together of Richard Nixon in his 1968 speech in which he was running against Hubert Humphrey for president. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to play it for you, John, and just ask you if what lessons we can learn from this. This is Nixon taking a position against LBJ and against the war. Here's Richard Nixon.
For 4 years, this administration has had the support of the loyal opposition for the objective of seeking an honorable end to the struggle. Never has so much military and economic and diplomatic power been used so ineffectively. And if after all of this time and all of this sacrifice and all of this support, there is still no end in sight, then I say the time has come for the American people to turn to new leadership not tied to the mistakes and the policies of the past. That is what we offer to America. Look at our problems abroad. Do you realize that we face the stark truth that we are worse off in every area of the world tonight than we were? We've had enough of big promises and little action. The time has come for honest government in the United States of America. And there is only one answer to such a record of failure, and that is a complete house cleaning of those responsible for the failures on that record.
Now, that Nixon setting aside whatever we may think of him or history may think of him for that matter, that message beat Hubert Humphrey.
That was eerie.
Yeah. How consistent is that with what you're hearing in your polling?
Very consistent with a half of a message that will win. The half of the message is that we've faced the problem in the world. Half of the message is diplomatic efforts are a disaster. Half the message that we're worse off. What's missing so far is the second half of the message, which clearly is what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
I for one, I will talk to both sides, but let's talk about the Democrats and talk to the Democrats. I for one would suggest to them that if they're counting on simply going into November by saying we're not Bush and we're not the majority Republicans in Congress that have brought you this mess, that they'll win some seats, but they won't translate this into any kind of a mandate. What voters, and in particular their base, are calling for is, as I've said, clarity on the war in Iraq, exit strategy, and a way of dealing with the war on terrorism by, in reverse, linking the failure in Iraq to the war on terrorism. See, President Bush has been winning on the basis of that linkage up through 2004. Now, what Democrats need to do is continue that linkage, but doing it in reverse by saying, not that we're, as the Republicans would say, we're so popular, we're so good fighting the war on terrorism that you need to support Iraq. Democrats need to say, war in Iraq has been a failure. You know that. You, the American people, in fact, are telling us that. And it has actually endangered our fight in the war against terrorism.
Now, I've had Republicans on this program, on a regular basis, actually, I have them on, who are saying things like, they're still saying, we have to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them here. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's going to continue to play?
Well, it could continue to play in the absence of any clear message from the from the Democrats,
and we'll
pick up that.
We're talking with John. Yeah, we'll pick that up on the other side of the break. And also, we've got a couple of callers here with questions for you. We're talking with John Zogby. He's the president and CEO of Zogby International, the independent pollster. And our number 1-866-440-8466. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I know a place. Ain't nobody crying. Ain't nobody worried. Ain't no smiling faces. No, lying to the races.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. We're talking with John Zogby, who's an independent pollster and president and CEO of Zogby International, a website, zogby.com. And our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. John, you mind if we just start taking some calls here?
No, let's go to it.
Got a bunch of folks with a whole lot of questions for you. Let's start out with David in Granby, Massachusetts. David, you're live with John Zogby.
Oh, thank you. It's good to talk to you.
Hi.
I wanted to ask you a question, but I just want to make a real quick observation first, that I've been touched by the level of concern of right-wing pundits over the soul of the Democratic Party in the wake of Ned Lamont's win. I mean, it's just so heartwarming. But my question is for Mr. Zogby is, I read the results of a poll that you conducted earlier this year of the troops in Iraq.
Yes.
And I believe that you found that almost 90% of the troops who are there think that we're there because we're avenging Saddam Hussein's role in 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you did any sort of probing as to where they got that idea and why it's so persistent. And the second part of the question is that I thought was interesting is that even though they have that opinion, that I believe it was a figure almost 70% of the troops think that they've done as much as they can do and that it's time to come home. I wonder if you could comment on that.
Thank you.
Good. Two good questions and thanks. It was 85% who said that the clearest part of their mission was that Saddam was linked with 9/11. And no, we did not probe it, and I'm sorry we didn't, but this was a logistical nightmare, and so I think we might get a little bit of a buy on this one. It was there's a book in this poll just in terms of the methodology and how we were able to get onto the bases and get out of the bases and get results. And so we didn't have as much opportunity for the kind of probing that I'd normally like to do. But it was the result, at least in that one particular question, I thought was very telling. In terms of the other question, yes, 72% indicating that they wanted troops out, wanted U.S. troops in general out within 12 months, and a majority wanting them out within 6 months. That was back in January. No reason at all to believe that the same doesn't hold true today. There was a real bifurcation, incidentally, between wanting to stay a bit longer if you were a Marine or full-time U.S. military versus if you were in the Army National Guard or the Reserves. Quite a difference between those two that averaged out to 72%.
Interesting. Dave in Los Angeles, California, you're live with John Zogby.
Hi, Tom, and a real honor to speak with you, John.
Thank you.
I've got a question for you. Have you ever considered adding a question to one of these polls that would tend to identify which industry sector these folks' household income comes from, i.e., are they part of the private sector, or are they part of the defense or government?
We have in some polls, but generally we haven't in the national political polls, but I think you've got a good idea there. The only thing is that in terms of sector, we would have to cluster the sectors so that we didn't dissipate it so much that we got in tons of data where the groups were so small that we just couldn't get any, you know, significant statistical analysis from it. And I don't mean to bother you with that kind of language, but you know what I mean. Drilling down to working for defense, well, a lot fewer people work in defense than they did 10 years ago, we'd have to cluster them in such a way that we were getting groups by the hundreds so that we could do something meaningful.
In order for the statistics to be meaningful. John, we're getting a lot of calls, by the way. I'm wondering if you can stick around for another segment. Do you have another 15, 20 minutes you can spend?
Sure.
Okay, great. Let's carry this forward. Doug in Long Island. Hey, Doug, we have about a minute here before we have to take a break.
Hey, I was just wondering, John, if your statistics reflect the possible idea that the Lamont election is really a referendum on the Democratic Party, the leaders in Congress, failure to speak out loudly and clearly against the Bush administration, as opposed to Schumer and Reid saying this is a referendum against Bush.
Oh, no. This is you hit the nail on the head. This is a referendum. It's a referendum on the party and the direction that Democrats, mainstream Democrats, want to take the party. There are other results in the poll that indicate that now that Lamont has won, there is more optimism that rank-and-file Democrats feel that they'll take control of at least one House of Congress, whereas they had told us before that they had very little hope that they would do that. They're seeing, mainstream Democrats, they're seeing from this the beginnings of, and I've used the word several times on the show already, a clearer direction for the party. Now the issue is whether or not candidates and party leadership will interpret those results.
Fascinating. We're talking with John Zogby. He's the president and CEO of Zogby International, the website Zogby.com, the independent pollster, NBC, Reuters, major media. And taking your questions, 866-440-8466. And I have a question for you, too, John, about exit polls and the 06 election. We'll get to that right after this break. 27 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, where reason is our lifestyle choice.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I once was young and starry eyed. Now I have these bittersweet memories. Songs were long and gas was cheap. No cell phones and water was free. Daddy paid and I never had to worry.
And welcome back to the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman radio program, 34 minutes past the hour. We're talking with John Zogby, the president of Zogby International, the CEO as well. Zogby.com, the website for John Zogby's, the independent pollster for his, for Zogby International, is your empire there, John. It's quite a, quite an enormous body of work you have done these many years. Let's go to our callers first, then we'll get to my question. Dave in Eureka, California. You're live listening on KGOE. You're live with John.
Oh, what a beautiful spot that is.
It is.
Is this Dave?
Yep.
I think you're going to get to touch on the issue that concerns me most. But, Mr. Zogby, in this day of electronic eavesdropping, and I'm speaking firsthand, my direct knowledge, that these tech Patriot Act troopers can invade computers. If you conduct a poll and tabulate it on your computer, these guys can go into it and screw it more in the favor that they would want it to be. So I hope you do keep an independent paper backup on any polls that are of significance.
A good question. I wish I had one of my techies on. I've got some of the best in the world. We have provided all sorts of firewalls, all sorts of security devices to protect ourselves as the polls are being conducted and also as the polls are being tabulated and then ultimately stored. I believe we are protected. We have no evidence at all that we've been crushed or crashed in any way, and it's something that is a high priority with us. Obviously, it's our livelihood and our record. I feel pretty confident so far.
Good. We're talking with John Zogby. The exit polls, I lived in Germany back in 86 for a year, 86, 87, and in that country, all the voting is done on paper. You put literally an X in the box kind of thing, and they're not even tabulated by computers. They're counted by civil servants who take a couple days off work and are observed by members of the political parties. Takes a couple of days, actually, to know the actual vote. But since the end of World War II, or a few years thereafter, when the democratic institutions were put into place in Germany, Germans have always known the outcome of their elections within 10-20 minutes of the end of the election. I'm sure you know this stuff because of the exit polls. The exit polls in that country are consistently within a fragment of 1%. And historically, my understanding is that's been the case in the United States until the 2000, the 2002, and the 2004 elections, when our exit polls seemed to go a little crazy. I'm wondering, first of all, what's your take on that? Why did the exit polls show that Al Gore won and that John Kerry won when the machine said something different? And secondly, are there any plans for anybody to do exit polling in the 2006 and 2008 elections?
Okay, bunch of questions there. First of all, in 2000, the exit polls actually worked. They showed that it was a very, very, very close election. That's what it was. No poll, no matter how large the sample, will ever give you anything less than a 1-point margin of error. Mm-hmm. And so when you get to a race that's 1 point or a half a point or 2/10 of a point, the best you can do is say, hey, too close to call, I'm not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. It's very foolish. I learned myself in 2004, very foolish to try to call an election that's too close to call. That's question number one. Question number two, you're absolutely right. I mean, our exit polls have been good, but they've begun to break down in 02, another close election for Congress, and then most especially in 04, where the exit polls really dropped the ball.
I'm of the opinion that the exit polls were accurate and that those elections were stolen. And I don't think that I have to wear a tinfoil hat to say that. I mean, you read Bobby Kennedy's piece in Rolling Stone magazine.
I did. It's a wonderful piece, and I have always maintained that we need a thorough investigation as to what happened. But I'll tell you this, there are changing dynamics, and I don't think the exit polls are prepared, that exit polls, as they're currently constituted, are prepared to deal with those dynamics. For example, we're going to have an election this year where we anticipate about 30% of the electorate nationwide will have voted prior to Election Day, which means stationing these hundreds and thousands of people at precincts all over the country is a moot point if you're only going to get a sampling of the 70% who vote on that day.
Is this because
people are... Oh, no, you know, there's mail-in voting, an increase in absentee voting. There's all sorts of mechanisms that make it easier for people to vote as a convenience factor.
Yeah. Boy, if I was in the business of trying to set up an election so it could be stolen and nobody would ever know with an exit poll, I would be sure to argue in favor of early voting in my state, and yet it seems like a good thing. You know, you want people to be able to vote for a couple of days. There's a real kind of catch-22 there of sorts. But how are we going to know if it was 6 and 08?
You know, as it's currently constituted, and I've made this argument now for several years, number one, I don't think exit polls should ever be used to call elections anyway. I think that their value is more in telling us who voted, how they voted the way they did, why they voted the way they did, period. Secondly, as currently constituted, I think exit polls are great in the Ukrainian situation. You know, the reformer wins by 11, but the exit polls, the official results, I'm sorry, show that the reformer wins by 11, but the actual results on Election Day show something completely different. Now what you know is when you've got a 20-point swing, hey, we've got a problem here. Yeah. But still, even in 2004, while I believe there were serious errors and I think that there should be an investigation, it was still an election that was too close to call in too many states.
Interesting. Julian in Grand Rapids, you're live with John Zogby. Our number 1-866-440-8466. Julian?
Hi. I have suggestions for your next poll, and that is that you ask the question, has the Iraq War made a terrorist attack more likely or less likely? A terrorist attack in the United States, more likely or less likely?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
You've not already asked a question similar to that, John?
Not that way, no, we haven't. To the best of my knowledge, though it's getting more and more familiar. Sorry for the pregnant silence here, but that's a very good point, very good question to ask.
Well, the follow-up, I guess, to that is, how do you decide what to do polling on? I'm assuming in some cases you have organizations, the Washington Post, the NBC, Reuters, whatever, who come to you and say, you know, we'd like to know what the Democrats think of Ned Lamont or whatever. Are there other times when you just decide, hey, I'm curious about this?
Oh, absolutely. We do a lot of polling where we'll just devise some questions, a finite group of questions, and then throw it open to clients, you know, various interest groups of all stripes, corporations and so on, to buy individual questions to not only to serve their needs, to get information that they can use, but also to help us defray the costs of doing the poll. But, you know, anytime we do a poll, 50 questions, 60, even 100 questions, you can usually use a multiplier of 5. Those are the numbers of questions that we wish that we did ask. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, seldom in 22 years have I ever done what I call the perfect poll, where I asked and exhausted everything that I wanted to ask in that given poll.
We're talking with John Zogby, the president and CEO of Zogby International. Their website is zogby.com, Z-O-G-B-Y. Have you done any polls, John, on how Americans are viewing what's going on right now in Lebanon?
I have. And what we've discovered is that by a factor 3-1, they support Israel over Lebanon. And also at the same time, they see this as not just, well, this is when we did the poll, which was about 12 days, 14 days ago. They see this as not a typical Middle Eastern skirmish, but having the potential for a prolonged regional war, if not a prolonged global war. That's where the critical mass was. So there, the American people recognize this as very, very serious.
Yeah, and they're concerned about it. Have you ever done any polling on what percentage of in particular, I'm curious about Republican voters, because Bush seems to be in this camp, think that a world war might actually be a good thing because it would bring about the return of Jesus?
No.
That's a serious question.
I know it is, and I'm sorry for chuckling. That's a very good question, and no, we have not. We haven't done any of those Left Behind kinds of things.
Yeah, because I mean those are the best selling books. The Left Behind series, 44 million copies I think now, and there's a lot of people who subscribe to that. And
they do, but no, we have not asked that. And at some point, because we do a lot of polling on religion, mm-hmm. and on religious beliefs, and I think that we've got to devote, you know, one major poll to the phenomenon of born again Christians. We do a lot on born-again Christians, but we haven't gone down that path.
Interesting. John Zogby, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to talk to you. Look forward to it.
It's been fascinating. John Zogby, he's the president and CEO of Zogby International. You can learn more at their website, Zogby, Z-O-G-B-Y, Zogby.com, independent pollster, world-famous independent pollster, John Zogby. Thanks again, John.
Take care, Tom.
You too. 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
But that's not the world I live in. This is not the life for me. My world's bigger than your problems, and it's bigger than me. That's not the world I live in. This is not the life for me. My world's bigger than your problems, and it's bigger than me.
And welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Fair and slightly unbalanced. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to the program. This Zogby poll is just absolutely fascinating. I'll just if you missed it at the beginning of the hour, we've been talking with John Zogby. He's off to other things now, but he just did this poll about Joe Lieberman and Ned Lamont. And this from Zogby International: an overwhelming majority of likely voting Democrats nationwide said they are glad 3-term Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman was walloped by anti-war challenger Ned Lamont in the state's Democratic primary election Tuesday. They also said the Lamont victory was one of the few pro-war Democrats in Washington, over one of the few pro-war Democrats in Washington, makes them optimistic they can win control of or of at least one of the two houses of Congress in November. This was a poll that was conducted on August 9th and 10th, and with an margin of error of plus or minus 2.9 percentage points. And here's how it shook out. It found that nearly 4 out of 5 Democrats, 79%, nearly 4 out of 5 Democrats, this is nationwide, not in Connecticut, nationwide, were happy that the former Democratic vice presidential nominee was knocked off by Lamont, a wealthy cable television executive whose campaign focused almost exclusively on his opposition to the war and Lieberman's support of it. Just 12% of Democrats nationwide said they were not pleased with the results of the primary, which riveted political junkies across the nation. Another 10% of Democrats said they were not sure what to think. Nearly 2 in 3, 62%, said they believe the results of the Connecticut primary will hold national implications for the elections coming up this fall. In addition, 70% said they think that the Lamont victory makes the Democratic Party stronger heading into this important election season. Majority Democrats said they believe the Lamont victory points to a Democratic takeover of at least one House of Congress this fall, while 27% said they believe it's a precursor to victories that would result in Democratic control of both the U.S. House and Senate. This is incredible. More than three quarters of Democrats, 78%, across the nation, forget the state, forget the candidate, three quarters of Democrats all across the nation said, 78% said they want candidates who oppose the occupation of Iraq. And only 6% of Democrats say that they think that their candidates should, quote, support the war, end quote. 13% say they want a candidate, they want their candidates to take a middling stance somewhere between support and opposition. So here you have nearly 80% of Democrats across the nation, more than three quarters, 78% of Democrats across the nation saying, get out now, and get elected officials in who are going to help get us out now. Columbus, Ohio, the plain dealer, this Ted Wendling, the bureau chief, writes a piece for the Columbus, Ohio plain dealer. Dateline Columbus, voting right activists on Thursday produced what they said is the most compelling evidence to date that Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell is trying to suppress the vote in November. Now, this is what he did 2 years ago and helped George W. Bush steal the election in 2004. And it's fairly well documented now. Bobby Kennedy's piece in Rolling Stone magazine, Mark Crispin Miller's book, Fooled Again. No shortage of evidence out there. It's just that the FBI, the federal government, the Bush administration refuses to investigate violations of the Voting Rights Act. But back to the article by the Ted Wendling plain dealer, the Cleveland plain dealer. In an advisory that contradicts a provision in the voter reform bill legislators passed last year, get that? Contradicts? In other words, Blackwell is going to go against, he's going to break the law. Blackwell's office informed county boards of election on June 5th that voters must present a photo ID, quote, showing the voter's name and current address, end quote, to cast a regular ballot. This conflicts with the new law, which permits a person to vote by regular ballot, even if the ID, typically a driver's license, has the voter's former address. After ignoring the activist group's entreaties since early June, even after they threatened to go public, Blackwell's office sent an email to all 88 county elections boards Thursday. It reiterated instructions the office sent in May. Ken Blackwell telling the 88 county election boards to break the law this fall. The organization here? The Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. They're most concerned about it because a lot of their folks don't have consistent addresses, and many vote by provisional ballot. He says statistical research study by researchers at Cleveland State University shows up to 1.2 million Ohioans carry driver's licenses that list former addresses. Those people move; they don't bother to go down and get a new driver's license just because they've moved. They still live in Ohio. They still have an Ohio driver's license. 1.2 million Ohioans. 638,000 of those people are going to vote in November, and Ken Blackwell is going to tell them they can't vote. I'm assuming he's figuring that the people who are more likely to move are more likely to vote Democratic because they're more likely to be, blue-collar workers who are moving because they have to have a job, take a different job if they're moving within the state. Whereas the wealthier Republican living in the exurbs less likely to move? I don't know. I mean, is it just that he totally just wants to disenfranchise homeless people? I couldn't be that. It couldn't be that because that's too small a chunk. It's just incredible, though. Here's Ken Blackwell fixing to steal another election. And it's being reported in the newspapers. But is the FBI doing anything about it? Is the Justice Department investigating? Nope. The Bush administration is not interested in investigating vote fraud in the United States if that vote fraud leads to the election of Republicans. It's just that simple. And just that wrong. Just that absolutely wrong. After the break, Chris Simcox with the Minutemen. Indeed. We'll see what's going on with these guys. 57 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman radio program. News without conflicts of corporate global corporate interest. Oh, man. One of our friends, Le Proletariat, in the chat room. I believe that Le Pro has passed on, one of our regulars. So I got a note about it a couple days ago, and just in the general madness, it slipped by. I wanted to mention it on the air. Welcome back to the program. We have with us Chris Simcox. Chris is the president of the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps, the infamous Minuteman, militia is what they call you down there. It's when people want to speak derogatorily of you, Chris. Chris?
Yes, hello.
Hey.
The derogatory term would be vigilante or
vigilante. There you go.
When actually we're nothing more than a large neighborhood watch group who provided great service to the Border Patrol and the law enforcement along the southern border and the northern border.
Now, the last time we talked, you and I agreed that we would not have a problem of, by and large, we would not have a problem of illegal immigrants coming to the United States from the southern border if there were not people in the United States, corporations in the United States, offering them jobs. And so I, you know, asked, are you going to start picketing companies?
And I concur. It's a big mess. I mean, when you have a government that refuses to secure its borders, and then you have a government that refuses to hold employers accountable for hiring when it's against the law, then of course people are going to take advantage of that.
Well, I would argue that securing the border is A, impossible, and B, not necessary, and the example of Europe demonstrates that, and that really what you need to do is go after the employers. I mean, Europe did not have, still doesn't have, for that matter, you know, really serious functional borders for hundreds and hundreds of years, for thousands of years, and yet you can't work in one country if you're a citizen of another country, and so people by and large don't break those borders down, and that's how it was in the United States until Reagan did his amnesty in '86, and we stopped enforcing laws that made it illegal to hire illegal immigrants, and the Bush administration has not been enforcing those laws. I mean, they're talking about it, and they're doing a little flag waving every now and then, but I'm wondering why you guys don't start throwing up picket lines I guess picket lines would be the wrong line, whatever you're calling your defense lines along the Mexican border. Why don't you start putting those up around some construction sites?
Well, we have been. We're focusing on, again, holding elected officials, including city councils, mayors, and local government accountable. When it comes to, we're focusing on.
But they're not the ones who are doing the hiring.
I'm sorry?
They're not the ones doing the hiring.
Well, we're looking at day labor centers as a battleground in this sense, or to bring attention to the fact that city governments and elected officials are allowing people to break the law, basically. And then it's problematic with the employers, because if you take a look at it, our federal government, Michael Chertoff and Julie Myers, took a year of investigating to bust one company that they found that was involved in hiring, systematically hiring and protecting illegal immigrants.
Right.
Our federal government can't even, they have to step through a gauntlet of rules and regulations, and they have to have a case that will stand up.
Well, I think, come on, Chris, you and I both know that's nonsense. If they want to bust somebody, they can do it in a heartbeat.
Well,
they just don't want to. They just don't want to. I mean, their fat cat Republican donors will get upset, you know, if they start going after them.
I couldn't agree more, which brings the issue of why we necessarily target certain employers, because we had proof that they are hiring them. And, of course, their out is always, well, we checked their documents, and they look okay to us, and that's all we're required to do. So, you know, the government actually gives them an out when it comes to holding them accountable.
But, see, I think the American people, people, you know, for a while there, people were all concerned about the border, and, of course, there were the xenophobes and the racists among that bunch, and I know you've suggested that you've tried to weed those kinds of folks out of your group, although your group is often characterized as that, and I'm agnostic on this issue of, you know, what the Minutemen are all about. But if taking you at face value, what you say, your concern is the fact that wages in the United States are being driven down and the middle class is being hurt by by millions of people coming into this country willing to work for much lower wages than Americans would be willing to work for. In other words, there's no job that an American won't do for a decent wage. But there's a lot of employers who don't want to pay a decent wage. And by the way, MinutemanHQ.com is the website for the Minutemen. And it just seems to me that increasingly Americans are, number one, buying it that Bush is doing something about the border down there when you and I know that it's cosmetic at best. And secondly, ready to crack down on employers. And if you guys want to increase your profile and have some success in solving this problem of illegal immigration into the United States, I just don't get it why you're not going after the employers. Are you afraid of the kind of blowback that the Republicans are afraid of?
No, we're not afraid of anything. And again, this is certainly not a partisan move. What we're looking at now is supporting candidates who in the next election who will go to Washington D.C. and pass tough legislation that will hold these employers accountable, because we know if we hold the employers accountable, then we'll see attrition through enforcement. And we need, I've said that many times, we need some high-profile CEOs of companies going off in handcuffs to jail for violating federal immigration laws and hiring laws, and engaged in not only complicitly engaged in helping the document fraud industry, but also Social Security fraud.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's, you know, I've been an employer for the better part of 25 years, and you know, I don't recall ever having had to check anybody's documents. It's really simple. You submit you've the first FICA payment to the IRS, and they have the ability to respond and say, I'm sorry, you must have the number wrong because this person and this address don't line up.
Yes, but we see them not forcefully enforcing that situation.
But no, it's not even a matter of enforcing. I mean, AMC Theaters, for example, is right now engaged in a program where they are asking, when they pay that first FICA payment, if they get the information back from the IRS that says this Social Security number, there's something wrong with it, there's something suspicious about it, it's not that person's address, or two people are using it, or we didn't issue it, or whatever. And you know, it's a pretty simple way to do it, right? They go back to the employee and say, hey, give us some proof that this is really your Social Security number and you're who you say you are. And when they did that in one of their theaters, the first time they did it in Delaware, they had 18 people resign. Overnight, go, oh, sorry. You know, turns out that they were probably illegal immigrants. I mean, why don't we have more employers doing this?
That's the big question. Why don't we have that? And I think it's important that part of the immigration reform proposals that are being introduced when it comes to enforcement would be a mandatory Social Security verification policy.
It seems like the simplest way. Putting a wall between us and Mexico. I mean, I used to live near the East German West German border, and I tell you, it's first of all, it's a god awful thing to look at, and secondly, it would cost a fortune to really and truly enforce it, and third, that's not the kind of country we are, but we are a nation of laws and policies, and you know, let's simply enforce the laws of employers. Stop this giant magnet.
Well, that is true, and I am one that would hate to see a wall, even though we're helping landowners build walls to protect their property from the incursions that happen 24 hours a day. But what we need is manpower along the border, as well as technology, and some walls in certain places, because it's a fact that people just refuse, especially the drug dealers. Walls mean nothing to them. They're going to bring in, we're talking about the drug industry and the illegal drug industry, and the violence that's happening along that corridor there. It's so important to have boots on the ground. We are seeing some National Guard make a difference, but of course it's a cat and mouse game. The National Guard show up and the drug dealers and human smugglers just move to a new area.
But isn't a good chunk of that problem the fact that Mexico is being run by a corrupt oligarchy?
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head, and that's why we must put all of our resources on the border.
So again, it's not a matter of we need a wall. It's what we need is a rational foreign policy relative to Mexico, and we need to hold this, you know, Fox accountable, or whoever, you know, whoever it's going to be, the next president, and say, hey, you know, bring some democracy to your country and start taking care of your people.
Absolutely, and we'd like to see that all of the people who wish to help if you want to focus on the people of Mexico, certainly we need a lot of community service, a lot of altruistic input into helping Mexico solve its problems, which is being run, like you said, by criminal syndicates.
Basically. Yeah. Chris Simcox, the CEO, or the president, rather, of the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps, MinutemanHQ.com, the website. Chris, thanks for being with us today.
Good thing. My pleasure. Thanks.
Interesting conversation. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Nines are running to and fro, hard working at the mill, never fail in the mail, yet and come a rotten bit long.
Too much monkey business, too much monkey business, too much monkey business for me to get involved in.
And welcome back, 21 minutes past the hour on the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our deceased member of our chat room, Le Proletariat, heads up, his website, and this will be essentially my eulogy, I guess, is just go check out the website, LEPROLETARIAT.com, just like you'd think, LeProletariat.com. And mad as hell, I ain't going to take it anymore. It's a marvelous site, and we're going to miss him. Ellen Ratner's with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, the website. Hey, Ellen.
Hi, Tom. I got to tell you that we're going to hear from Mr. Chertoff again. This guy is not missing an opportunity to get on camera and to look as if the United States is saving the day.
And yet the fact of the matter is that the Bush administration had virtually nothing to do whatsoever with the arrest of these guys in the U.K.
Zero, zip, nothing, other than the fact that maybe they used some of their influence to sort of throw a carrot or stick in front of Musharraf in terms of their arrests.
Yeah, and the 9/11 Commission gives the Bush administration an F for failure to improve aviation security.
You know, it's completely crazy. As you know, Charlene is with us and as a pilot. I know many other pilots through her, and certainly we have been talking to people behind the scenes who do aviation security here in Washington, some of the Fox people, some of the other folks. And there's no reason on earth why, if they spent money, they cannot do appropriate security without having the people line up for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, all you need to do is put out on more TSA people, and they don't hardly pay the TSA people.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing that I find amazing is that it was 11 years ago that was the first time when Ramzi Youssef and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I guess it was, hatched this plot to use high concentration hydrogen peroxide and acetone together and make these
You mean the Philippines incident?
That's right, and make a liquid bomb, and they blew up they blew underneath the chair of this Japanese guy who died in that flight, and it didn't bring down the plane, but it was a test, you know, in order to make that kind of a bomb, it requires 100% pure hydrogen peroxide. And the stuff you buy in a pharmacy, in a drugstore, to put on a scrape or a scratch or whatever, is 3% hydrogen peroxide. 100% pure hydrogen peroxide is only sold for industrial use. It is so dangerous to handle. And we've known for, 12 years now, that somebody actually used this stuff to make a bomb. Why has the Bush administration in the last 5 years, I mean, you could argue about the Clinton administration before that, but that, you know, that was pre-9/11 thinking, right? Why is it since 9/11 that the Bush administration has not bothered to go to the chemical industry and say, we would like you to please keep records of people who are buying 100% pure HO? You know,
well, it took the Murrow building for them to ask to keep records on huge amounts of fertilizer sold.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this is not rocket science, and with the proper amount of money, you could train. I mean, people say we're fighting this war in Iraq. Well, hello. They say it doesn't come to our our shores. And if we don't fight terrorism in Iraq, then it'll come to our shores. It just makes no sense.
No, it's this is one of the most absurd arguments. So,
And as I said to you this morning on your morning program, there is definitely a situation where a Bush administration is trying to put forth unpopular programs in terms of entitlement issues, in terms of education, No Child Left Behind on a college kind of level, and they're using this to get this under the wire so that it doesn't make it to the front pages.
And they're trying to pass laws that make it illegal to be a whistleblower. That will criminalize revealing, for example, the NSA thing, so that no longer will people who work for the government be able to talk to reporters from the New York Times without going to prison.
It's very, very scary, and they're all doing this under the cloak and dagger of secrecy.
Yeah, it's not good, and it ain't healthy at all. Ellen, we have just basically about 1 minute left on this thing, and I'm wondering what's your take on how this whole thing with Bush and Cindy Sheehan is playing out. Cindy, I spoke with Cindy this morning, and she was in Seattle. She'd been in the ER overnight from her fast. It just seems like there's this compelling moral power of somebody to say, you know, the killing is still going on, let's stop it. And yet the media seems to have turned their back on it.
The problem is, as I understand from Victoria, who was down there, and you probably talked to her, in terms of Cindy Sheehan, she has somehow alienated the press. Hmm. And that, I don't know how this happened, whether she, according to Victoria, she wasn't there at times when perhaps she should have been there, got upset, perhaps when the press was less interested. I don't know what her PR mechanism was, but turning off the White House press, she's got to figure out a way to get them reinterested.
Yeah, interesting. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Always great to have your reports. 27 minutes past the hour. I'm going to talk about illegal immigration, or is it illegal employers? Can people be illegal? I don't think so. And your calls after this. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you, Talk Radio for the rest of us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's good to be king, just for a while, to be there in velvet. Yeah, to give them a smile.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
It's good to be king of your own little town.
I guess. Welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Yes. The place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least a clean election every now and then, you know, that we'd really settle for that.
Now, the DeLay Political Death Watch.
Yeah, Tom DeLay, at it again, laying out his Democrats are weak on terror meme. Count how many lies Tom DeLay's just strung together in this one 32-second piece. I mean, just this is just absolutely incredible. Here we go. Let's start up.
They don't want to fight this war on terrorism. If they did...
Now, okay, first of all, he's talking about the Democrats. They don't want to fight this war on terrorism. Now, that assumes, first of all, that there is a war on terrorism. Okay? And which... No, we can. There are some criminals out there who have attacked the United States. Bill Clinton went after them. There are criminals in the United States who have attacked the United States. Bill Clinton went after them. Tim McVeigh put him in prison. We have gone after people who have used terror tactics against the United States. But you know, the war on drugs, the war on illiteracy, the war on terror, all these phony wars. Come on. Let's deal with some real issues here, rather than this nonsense rhetoric. We'll start with that.
Bill Clinton would have led us into the war on terrorism and against Islamic fanatics.
Okay, lie number two. Bill Clinton would have led us against Islamic fanatics. Bill Clinton tried to assassinate Osama bin Laden. I had a conversation with Sandy Berger, the Clinton's national security advisor, had the job that Condi Rice had when she first came into the White House, and he told me personally that when he handed off his job to Condoleezza Rice, that he told her that her number one priority was Osama bin Laden, because within the next year, in all probability, Osama bin Laden was going to strike somewhere in the United States. They had already foiled several plots, including one guy coming in from Vancouver, Canada. They had tried to assassinate Osama bin Laden. They missed him by 30 minutes with a missile. One time they tried to shoot him with missiles in Somalia, and the Republicans were on the floor of the House going, "Oh, he's trying to wag the Monica." And you know, and he still continued to try and take out bin Laden. Another time he had him in their sights, and they said shoot him, and they discovered that he was sitting with a bunch of members of the royal family of Oman. And the United Arab Emirates, I guess it was, they had to say, we'll hold off. But they knew he was there. They knew he was a problem. They knew he was plotting against us, and they were doing everything they could to take him out and everything they could to find it. And Al Gore's comment to Dick Cheney as he handed over power was, get bin Laden. Dick Cheney was put in charge of the counterterrorism task force. He had two jobs, counterterrorism task force and energy task force. He spent all his time meeting behind closed doors, so closed that he went to the Supreme Court to keep it a secret from us with the energy task force, with Ken Lay and all his buddies, figuring out how many billions of your and my taxpayer dollars we were going to give to the oil companies this year, which they just did with their oil bill, and how to screw California and get Gray Davis out of office and a Republican into office. They spent so much time on that the counterterrorism task force that Dick Cheney headed up didn't even meet until September of 2001. Didn't even meet. So here, that was lie number two from Tom DeLay, that Bill Clinton did nothing about terrorism or about Islamic radicals who were coming after us. Not only did he go after the Islamic radicals, he also went after the Christian radicals. Tim McVeigh, who blew up McMurray building in Oklahoma City, thinking that that was going to bring about the end times.
Their worldview is, can't we all get along?
No, that was, as if you'll recall, the clips we played yesterday, that was Eisenhower's worldview. It was Jack Kennedy, I guess, who also said we should never negotiate from fear and we should never fear to negotiate. So, yeah, I guess you could say actually our worldview, the Democratic worldview here is not so much can't we all get along, but we're willing to talk to people and try and work things out before we start throwing bombs. Because when you just go in and kill 100,000 civilians like we did in Iraq, it really doesn't do much good. It costs a bloody fortune. It angers them terribly, and it you're just inciting terrorism all over the planet. DeLay continues with his now he's going to do the straw man thing. This is where you now characterize your opponent as something that they're not, and then attack them for being what they're not in the first place. And he's going to try and say that Democrats are the stereotype of some person who is of the 98-pound weakling, basically, you know, the Republican version of this, somebody who's just afraid of conflict altogether.
Surely that we can talk our way out of this, so when we are attacked, their first reaction is to recoil.
No, I don't think so. I think that when we're attacked, the first reaction that the Democrats had in the United States, well, for example, when we were attacked, when the first time the World Trade Center was attacked, Bill Clinton and said, we're going to get those SOBs, and he got them. You know, the blind sheikh is sitting rotting in a jail cell right now. The guys who put together the first attack on 9/11 on the World Trade Center, they're in jail thanks to Bill Clinton. Sorry, it wasn't, hey, can't we work this out? No, it was, we're going to go after you. We're going to throw your butt in jail. Is Osama bin Laden's butt in jail? No, I don't think so. Somehow it just doesn't seem to be the case, does it? That we haven't found him.
So I don't know where he is. I just don't spend that much time on him. Kelly, to be honest with you. Again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
Yeah, so, okay, what do we have to lie number five? DeLay continues.
And say, oh, this is really horrible, it's too harsh, and you can't go after these wonderful people.
These wonderful people, yeah, you can't go. See, he's creating this phony straw man.
That just killed a bunch of Americans.
Can you believe it? Can you believe it? And this is being played all over the media, like Tom DeLay's words of wisdom for the day. Give me a break. And then on top of that, we've got Bush going off on Islamic fascism. I mean, you've got to just consider this for a moment. Here's George W. Bush, I think. Hang on just a second.
This nation is at war with Islamic fascists.
Now, first of all, fascism is the merger of corporate and state interests. You know, the word was invented by Benito Mussolini, and Mussolini and Franco were the real fascists. Hitler had some fascism, but, you know, people think that fascism is Nazism. Sorry, Nazism was a sick, twisted cult, death cult, and that's what was running Germany. And that's what Hitler was. He was not a true fascist. Mussolini was the fascist. Franco was the fascist. Because they merged corporate and state interests. In fact, in Italy, Mussolini dissolved the parliament and replaced the elected members of parliament with corporate representatives. In other words, if you lived in Verona, the biggest corporation in Verona, they sent their representative to represent you in parliament. If you lived in Venezia, in Venice, the largest corporation there, they sent their person to parliament to represent you. You were the people of Italy in the Italian parliament in the 1930s, after Mussolini dissolved parliament and put into place fascism, the people in the various districts around the country were represented by their local corporation. That's fascism. That's the kind of thing that Bush is trying to do. So why is he using the word fascism? Well, because he doesn't want to use the real word of what bin Laden is all about, which is theocracy. Because Bush wants to do the same thing. We've got theocrats battling theocrats. So Bush is accusing not bin Laden specifically, he's accusing Muslims, first of all, broadly speaking, which is a terrible thing. Islam is not a religion of violence, I'm sorry. But certainly there's violence within it, just as there has been historically within Christianity and Judaism and Hinduism. I think Buddhism is probably the only major world religion that has never, you know, gone to war in the name of Buddha. But Bush talking about this, he's trying to get this meme out of fascism so that we won't be able to point out who he is and what he's really doing. And so that nobody will be talking about Islamic theocracy. Theocracy is a government run by people who believe that they're doing God's will and the government is being run according to the word of God from some revealed religion. That's a theocracy. And that is, in fact, what the Taliban was all about. That is what Mullah Omar was all about. That is what Osama bin Laden was all about. That is what Sheikh Khalid Mohammed, all of these guys, they're about theocracy. And oddly enough, that's also what George Bush is all about. He just wants a Christian theocracy here. He couldn't get it through Congress. Congress wouldn't give $1 billion to his friends in the churches in the election year 2004, even though it was a Republican Congress. So he just did it himself. With a stroke of a pen, he created his faith-based initiative program and gave $1,000 million to churches in the United States just in time for the 2004 election. $1 billion. Much of it going to black churches, which literally doubled their percentage of voters for Bush in the 2004 election. Theocracy. That's what's going on. It's an Islamic theocracy that is coming after us. Bush continues.
Who will use any means to destroy those of us who love freedom.
No, it's got nothing to do with freedom, George. It's got nothing to do with freedom. It's got to do with their perception that we're draining their oil, that we're going after them for the wrong reasons, that we're bombing, it's because you got this General Boykin out there running around going, our God is bigger than their God. And you promoted him rather than fired him. And this is off the wall. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls and more right after this. Tom Hartman with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Got no time for grand philosophy. I'll barely keep my head above the tide. I got this mortgage, got three kids in school. What you're saying is the truth, but really troubles me inside. I'd change the world if I could change my mind. If I could live beyond my fears.
And welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We're going to go to your calls in just a second. First, let's check out what's going on with the occupation of Iraq.
I want to know who the man in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lights in the barracks. There are people on the fire.
Security incidents in Iraq as of 12:30 today, GMT from Reuters. Baghdad, 6 bound and blindfolded bodies bearing signs of torture were found in various parts of, in different parts of Baghdad. Each had been executed with a single shot to the head. In Baiji, gunmen in 2 cars shot 1 civilian dead in the central part of that town. In Mosul, a policeman was gunned down in western Mosul, north of Baghdad. In Karbala and Kut, gunmen ransacked offices of the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan. In Anbar province, the bodies of 2 missing U.S. servicemen were found among the wreckage of their helicopter. And in Basra, hundreds of followers of the Shiite cleric, of a Shiite cleric of the Fadila party, marched peacefully against a newspaper column criticizing their leader. By the way, special thanks so much. It's Friday, it's the end of the week. Thanks so much for a great week to my producer, David Poole, Louise Hartman, to Tim MacArthur, who's... today's last day. Tim, thanks for everything you've done. You've just done a great job with us, and we wish you well in your further adventures. Lauren Kirshner's answering the phones and holding down the fort there at Air America Radio New York. To Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society and RadioPower.org. To Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room. Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website. To our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Special thanks. 1-866-440-8466. Rich in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Rich, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Thanks so much for talking about this Islamo-fascist and breaking it down. I had lunch with a friend today and asked him what that word meant, and he thought it meant an extremist. And I heard Fox using this like 2 years ago, and I thought, well, they're just trying to misdirect and create a newspeak to connect
fascism with
Islam.
That's
but really, when you look at it today, when the president used it yesterday, boy, it struck me. You know, what would be opposing fascism if it wasn't Islamofascism? So in essence, these guys are calling themselves what they are, and that is fascists. Since they are fascists, they need something to oppose, which is the Islamofascist. So in a weird, bizarre way, they're redefining who we've become, which is fascists.
Yeah, Freud would call it transference.
So. Exactly.
But we do psychobabble at our own peril, Rich.
Correct.
As a former psychotherapist, I want to testify.
But thanks for bringing it out there. We got to keep putting this out there. Thanks for the good work, my friend.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rich, for listening. Much appreciated. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number, Xavier at Santa Cruz, California, listening on KRXA. Hey, Xavier.
Yeah, I'm actually listening to you on the Internet.
good enough.
Don't quite make it up here. But yeah. I, too, want to thank you about that last piece you did. That kind of answered most of what I wanted to ask you. But specifically, I have a friend who's a... Orthodox Christian, and he's a really kind-hearted guy, but when it comes to, he's great with, you know, he's not racist against Arabic people, but Muslims. He wants to kill them all, and he feels that once you become a Muslim, you're categorically going to kill Americans.
I know, this is the one of those bizarre dimensions of human nature. I remember 25 years ago or so, visiting Ireland and going up into Northern Ireland, and this is when the war was still on, you know, I mean, when there were tanks driving around in the streets, and talking to Protestant families who I couldn't tell the difference looking at them from the Catholic families, right? And, you know, houses, anything, I mean, it wasn't like people were wearing badges or something. Somehow they all knew, you know, some instant built-in radar of some kind, maybe accents or something, I don't know. But talking to Protestant families who would talk about those murderous Catholics, and talking to Catholic families who would talk about those Protestants who have, you know, raped our country and destroyed our people and taken our way of life. And, you know, basically the Protestants in Ireland are the descendants of the original British occupiers going back, you know, 500 years.
What I wanted to ask
you, like,
Tom,
it never ends. Well, it has recently ended.
Tom, what I wanted to ask you, though, is specifically this guy gets his information from Newsmax and places like that. And a lot of the things that you mentioned, I'm wondering, are there specific credible sites, sources, like, say, within the U.S. government, something I can point him to say, information you're getting from Newsmax and all this stuff about is something I can give him that's concrete that he'll believe. Do you have any kind of pointers in that direction?
Well, yeah, I would just point people to some of the better progressive news sites, you know, Buzzflash.com, CommonDreams.org.
He'll claim they're lying, so that's my point.
Yeah. If he's truly a Christian, you might want to point him to the Sermon on the Mount.
Oh, yeah, I've done that.
I mean, you know, Matthew 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, tolerance is just, you know, at the core of that. I got to move along, Xavier. I'm sorry, I don't have an instant and easy answer. Mike in Pebble Beach, we got about 20 seconds, Mike. You can wrap the show up. Your comment? Mike?
Yes, I'm here.
You're live and on the air.
Oh, okay. Hello, Tom. My question is, were the liquid gels, expensive perfumes and so on that are... hapless passengers were forced to dump in order to fly, secured and analyzed by either the Brits or American explosives experts?
I can guarantee you the answer is no, because this was all theater.
Or were they picked up by screen trash removers? And if not, then what was the point, except maybe changing the subject away from getting out of Iraq?
You got it. Mike, this is all theater. It's all theater. Michael Chertoff is out there. He's just grabbing this thing for all he can. It is all theater. I mean, they're not checking the cargo in the planes. It's all theater. 57 minutes past the hour. We'll see you again on Monday. Remember, my friends, activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you Monday. Have a great weekend.
You have been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.